I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving with your families. If this is your first time here this morning, maybe you have no idea who I am. My name is Dez, and I'm the student director here at CORE. The reason I say first time is because if you haven't figured it out, you hear my name every other week. That's Josh and I's hosting rotation, so in case you haven't figured that out yet, that's what that is. And every other week, I tell you that I'm the student director. I'm hanging out with 6th through 12th grade. Every other week, I probably say something like, I have the best job, it's the coolest job here. But a new fun fact about me is that anyone who knows me even a little bit well would tell you that I don't hate shopping. Okay, I actually really like shopping, I really enjoy it, and I love a good deal, okay? Anyone else love to get a good bargain, a good deal? Anyone else love that? Molly, better raise your hand. So if you love to shop for a deal, maybe you go to like some great secondhand stores or some great thrift stores, and I love all those, okay? I'll hit all of those up. But do you know the absolute best market to get the best deal? It's the one on Facebook. Facebook Marketplace. If you guys shop on Facebook Marketplace, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's honestly the best. Like, you can shop locally. I can be like, okay, I want to see what's in Shelby today. I can move the little bar all the way to, I might go to Ashland this weekend and pick something up there. Or even farther, if I'm going to be somewhere else, I can see what goodies are in this town. Or if I want to have something shipped to me, I've done the get packages shipped in. I've sold stuff, shipped them out. I've done the local the pickup meetup, the meet at the door if they don't seem sketchy, or meet in public somewhere like at Walmart. I've literally done it all because I love Facebook Marketplace. And I have gotten some really good steals on Facebook Marketplace. I would actually go through the list and tell you about all of them today if we have time, but I don't think we do. So I'm going to tell you about my favorite Facebook Marketplace find today, okay? And before I do that, I want to give you just a little bit of context, just paint the picture a little bit for you. So before Josh and I moved here to Shelby in May, we actually lived in Georgia for about 2 years. And during the majority of that two-year duration, Josh and I were both in school full-time and working part-time, okay? So essentially that means making no money. And we were newlyweds, so we didn't have really any furniture at all. And so this was an exciting time. We're like, you know, bought this table from a thrift store, and then we got these dressers from a different thrift store, and it's like, this is cool, we have our own stuff. And we lived in this family's like little basement apartment at the time, okay? It was the perfect little situation. But we're like trying to make it our own, you know? And I'm like, I think I want a bookshelf. Josh is like, we don't really have any books. I'm like, I know, but I think we need to fill the space, put some decor on it. I think we need a bookshelf. So we go to Target. We had some gift cards from our wedding, and we get, you know, just your standard white Target bookshelf, self-assemble, you know, just literally what you can picture, the white standard bookshelf from Target. The one that has a back that you're supposed to anchor to the wall, we didn't do that. And so eventually we have this, what is a bookshelf, starts to collect actual books, okay? Because Josh was in seminary, and I actually started to take up a love for reading, and so now we have actual books on this bookshelf, and it's starting to pile up, it's starting to get thick. And while this thing wasn't anchored to the wall, okay, we didn't put it together all the way. We just kind of like half, you know, some of you are like that too. You're like, yeah, just do what needs to get done. And so then we started taking up a lot for board games. And so the bottom shelf is stuffed with board games, and we've got books on it and some random decor here and there. And this thing just becomes this thing starts to become just a safety hazard overall, okay? We have little kids that live above us at the time, and they would come downstairs and play, and I'm like, someone's going to get hurt. They're like doing cartwheels, and if they even look at that bookshelf, it's going to fall over on them. I just know it. We hosted a married couple small group in our basement at the time, and there was this one guy who would always sit right next to this bookshelf, and we were always like, ah, that's the way you're going to go, death by bookshelf. I'm so sorry, because every time you just even bumped it, it would like start shaking, and we would just be like, oh no. And so this thing was just a problem. We needed to replace it, obviously. And while our wedding gift card budget kind of ran out, I'm like, well, Josh, give me a number, okay? I'm going to hop on Facebook Marketplace, and I'm going to find us a bookshelf. And I was so excited about it. I'm like, this is going to be good. We live in Cumming, Georgia. I mean, you guys can probably just imagine the surrounding areas and the stuff that we can find down there. And so he gives me a budget. I'm like, okay, I can work with this. But I had a very specific bookshelf in mind. Okay, I just didn't want another standard, untrustworthy, unreliable, shaky, probably gonna fall over on someone Target bookshelf. That's not what I was looking for. I was looking for this sturdy thing, okay? Something that didn't need to be anchored to the wall. And I also wanted some like doors on the bottom, right? For all my games. Because having all the board games on the bottom of my bookshelf, it just wasn't really going with my aesthetic. So I was like, we need to hide those, okay? The books are good. Those make us look really smart. And that's just like, that's a really good thing. But I need also room for our book collection to grow. So I have this specific bookshelf in mind. And maybe now some of you are like, Des, that's not a bookshelf. You're talking about like a buffet or something. Whatever. I don't know what it's called, but I'm going to keep calling it a bookshelf. So I'm on Facebook Marketplace, and I look for days, weeks, maybe even months to find this bookshelf. And finally, after saving so many things and sending so many of the, like, hey, Janice, is this still available? I don't know however many people do that too, but that's literally like putting it in the cart for me. Like, I just hit that button. Is this still available? Those people probably hate me. Don't tell them that I do that. But this one day, I came across the perfect bookshelf, okay? And I messaged Gary. I think his name was Gary. I messaged Gary, and I'm like, Gary, is this still available? And he says, yes, it's still available. And I'm so excited. I'm like, we're going to get this bookshelf. This is going to be awesome. No one is going to be in danger anymore. This is going to be great. And then we have a problem. We have a problem because Josh and I don't own a truck. So how are we going to go pick up this bookshelf? And I'm devastated. And I'm like, okay, this is a brilliant idea. I'm going to offer Gary some gas money. And I know that if I just offer Gary some gas money, he will bring it to us. Gary probably has a truck, right? He's got this big bookshelf. He has to have a truck. So I say, Gary, if I give you some extra money, will you bring it to us? He says, no. I'm like, okay, great. Gary says, but if you can just get here, it's yours. What? The bookshelf of my dreams? This big, hefty, sturdy, trustworthy, reliable bookshelf. It's mine. I can have it for free. I'm like, okay, let's do this. So Josh and I start texting people. We're like texting our small group. We're like, anyone, can we use your truck this weekend? And of course, the guy who always sat by our other bookshelf, you know, the one that almost died from the other one, he was like more than glad to let us borrow his truck to go pick up this new, sturdy bookshelf. And so we went down there and we got this thing. I even have a picture of it. We found out Gary made this bookshelf. Like, look at that handcrafted thing. Let's give it up for Gary. Like, what a great shelf. He made that himself. We've painted it white since then, but man, it was everything I was looking for and more, and Gary just gave it to us. And I think that's the reason that this is my favorite Facebook Marketplace find, because Gary just gave it to us. And most Americans, you know, most Americans are way more focused on receiving than they are on giving. Way more focused on themselves, way more focused on receiving rather than giving. We've been talking about this over the past couple weeks. We've been talking about how actually generosity, it's more than just random acts of giving. And how we've discovered that, well, most Americans don't actually know how to be generous. And so instead of just assuming that all of us know how to be generous, we decided to dive into a conversation on generosity and what that even looks like and how to be generous. And so that's why we've been in this series called Crazy Like Us and talking about what that looks like and talking about the promise and the definition and all these things around generosity. Because generosity isn't just random acts of giving over time. It isn't just sporadic or flippant. Generous people actually have a plan to be generous. Generous people have a plan. They don't have to be emotionally provoked. They don't have to be coerced or convinced. Generous people have a plan. And if you have a plan and if you're a generous person, the promise of generosity is this. It's that when you become generous, you actually will give more, you will save more, and you will consume less. I think that's something that all of us would probably shake our heads and go, it sounds like a pretty good idea. Sounds like a good thing to me. giving more money away, saving more money, that sounds responsible and wise, and consuming less. I mean, I think we could all probably acknowledge the fact that we don't need more stuff. That's the promise, that when you become generous, you will give more, you will save more, and you will consume less. But unfortunately, that's not what's normal. What's normal, what most Americans experience, the habits that most Americans live out financially is this. It's that we get paid, and then we spend more than we make, and then we have a bunch of debt, and then we have to pay off all of our debt so we have no margin, and then we're worried about future consumption. And then, well, we probably get paid again, and the cycle starts all over again. We buy more stuff than we can afford, and so we have a bunch of consumer debt, and so we have to pay off all of our consumer debt, and that's exhausting and annoying. We have to pay all that off, so then we don't have a lot of money left, and then we're worried all over again about future consumption. Maybe it's a cycle of, like, we're excited because we bought this new thing, and now, oh no, we're stressed because of the payments, and then it's like, we're yelling, we're fighting, we're sad, and we're worried because we don't know if we'll have enough money for the next month or for the next thing. Maybe this is your experience. Maybe you can relate with this. I think on some level we all can, a little bit. And we can all acknowledge that this is kind of crazy. And the fact that this is normal is really unfortunate because this is exhausting. This is exhausting. And this is what happens when we fall under the ownership myth. When we assume that everything that comes to us is for us to consume. You see, generous people don't fall under that assumption consumption. Generous people don't assume that everything that comes to them is for them to consume. Generous people don't assume that. They don't think that just because it comes to me, it's for me. They don't think that everything that's coming my way is for me to spend. Generous people don't think that way. Generous people don't live that way. And if we look at this crazy cycle, this exhausting cycle, if we look at this cycle of spending more than we make and having debt and no margin and worrying, it's exhausting, right? The only way out is the way that Jesus offers. It is the way of generosity. Generosity is the only off-ramp to living in more freedom, to taking a deep breath, to not always worrying. And this is the definition of generous that we've been talking about over the past couple of weeks. It's a bunch of long, lengthy words that I'm very excited about. We're going to break down today a little bit and explain what they mean. But the definition of generous is the premeditated, calculated, designated emancipation, which literally means setting it free, letting it go, emancipation of personal financial assets. This is the definition of generous. And if we want to become generous, if we want to escape the crazy way of living, the way that most Americans live, this is what we've got to pull apart today. This is what we've got to figure out how to do and how to live. So we're going to start with the very first word, premeditated. The premeditated part of being generous literally just means you have a plan. It just means that you have a plan. Some of you are like, well, Des, I'm not a planner. I'm a free bird. I go with the wind. I'm just a free spirit. I like to go where the day takes me. You have a plan. Oh, you have a plan. And the way that I know you have a plan is that if I or someone else followed you around for a week or a month and tracked all of your financial spending and all of the things that you do with your money and then came back to you and said, here you go. You would be like, huh, that's what I do all the time. Yeah, that's your plan. It might not be a very good plan, but your financial habits is your plan for your finances. And so if we're not intentional with the plan that we make, we're probably not going to have a good plan. And if we're going to have a plan no matter what, we might as well want to have a good plan. And if you don't think you have a plan, or you haven't been intentional to make a plan, the financial habits that you have or the way that you probably live probably follow that consumption assumption that everything that comes to you is for you, and And the way that you live, the patterns that you live by, probably sound like this. You spend just about everything that you make, and then you maybe save a little bit because you know that you should, and then you might give if there's anything left. That's what your plan looks like, probably. If you haven't been intentional to make a plan, if you assume that everything that comes to you is yours to consume, that's what your plan is. You consume or spend everything that you make, maybe save a little bit if you can, try to squeeze it out this month, but maybe not. And then if there's anything left, you might give if you're emotionally provoked. And that, well, not having a plan, that makes you a 3S giver. A 3S giver, there's nothing, well, wrong with that. I wouldn't call it generous, but you're a 3S giver. You probably give spontaneously, sporadically, and sparingly. You don't give consistently or continually. You probably don't give a whole lot. You give, but it just looks spontaneous, sporadic, and sparing. Generosity requires a plan. Generosity requires you to think ahead of time, for you to come up with a plan and be intentional about it and not just assume that everything that comes to you is yours to consume. Generosity also, the next part of the definition is calculated. And what calculated means is just that you are deciding ahead of time. This is just kind of part of the plan. You're going to decide ahead of time an amount or a percentage that you're going to give. Part of your plan that you're coming up with is calculating an amount or a percentage. Percentage is always better because as your income goes up, the amount that you give will go up. And you don't have to sit down and do a bunch of math and fractions and figure out, okay, well, we were giving this much and now we're making this much, so we should just do a percentage because then it can remain consistent. And people get all freaked out about all the zeros adding up, right? People are like, oh, $10? I can give $10. $100? I can give $100. You want me to give how much? People get all freaked out when they see the zeros start adding up, but the reality is that generous people, they always want to give more. They always want to give more. So you pick a percentage now, and then as your income goes up, so will the amount that you give, because generous people love to give more. They love to give more. So you decide ahead of time a percentage, and you decide ahead of time that giving will be a priority. You decide that it'll be a priority, and not just the last thing on the list, like what most Americans do. Not just, oh, if I have anything left at the bottom, then I will give. No, you pick a percentage, you make it a priority, and maybe you even give progressively. You don't have to pick one percentage and give that for the rest of your life. I've heard this crazy thing about, like, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of, like, I think it's called, like, backwards tithing or something. I've heard these crazy stories about people living on, like, 10% of what they make and giving the rest away. That probably sounds crazy to you. I think that sounds amazing. Some of you are like, heck yeah, I want to live that way. Generous people always want to give more. So over time, as you assess where you're at in life, maybe you even bump that percentage up a little bit because generous people want to give more. They want to give progressively. So being generous looks like being a 3P giver instead of a 3S giver. Percentage, priority, and progressively. This is what generous looks like. Making it a priority, having a plan, designating a specific percentage and amount. A few years ago, when I was kind of like towards the end of what I felt like was the dating scene for me, and I was like, okay, God, it's time to get real, right? Like, I'm done with this. I'm done with these relationships that aren't going to work anymore. Like, we're going to have some real conversations because we're going to figure this out now. I'm not doing any more of that back and forth stuff. We're gonna figure out who the real deal is, and then we're just gonna seal the deal, right? Like, I'm just done with this thing. And so I'm talking to God, and I'm like, okay, I knew that in the past I had had somewhat of a glimpse of what it might look like to do life with someone who wasn't generous. And I was like, huh, that might be a little difficult. If I want to be generous and the person that I'm doing life with, the person that I essentially, we combine our income and we share it, like that would just be complicated, right? And so I told God, I said, hey, I said, the way that I'm going to know, like just kind of like our code, right? Like our little sign, it's going to be when I find someone that's generous. But it's got to be obvious, okay? Like, it's just going to come right out there and boom, like, generosity just hits me in the face, okay? I don't know if I used the word generous. I might have said tithe or giving or something like that. But I knew what I was looking for. And I knew that that honored God. I know that for me to be someone that's generous and to be with someone that's generous and that prioritizes this, I knew that that would honor God. So I figured our little code, our little sign, I figured it would be okay. So a few months later, I'm in the car. I'm actually in the middle of an internship that I did through a church, and I ended up working at that church as a student director, but I did this internship first, and it was a 10-month internship, and we raised all of the support, which means that we literally wrote letters and asked people for money. It was kind of intimidating, but that's what we did. It was for the experience. It made us better. And so we raised all of the money that we would live off of for 10 months, and so we're in the car at this one night. It was probably after a student night or something, and some of us young adults who were on the student ministry team, we were probably going out to B-dubs or something, and a couple of us in the car were in the internship, and some of us weren't, and this person in the back is, like, really interested in this internship, and they start asking a lot of questions about the support raising and how the whole process works and how difficult it is, and they go, okay, so over 10 months, if I were to raise this much money as a whole, then that would mean over the 10-month duration of the internship, each month I would be bringing in about this much money. And then he goes, oh, and then after tithing, it would be this much money. I turned around so fast, I said, do you want to get married? And here we are, 2.5 years later, we're married. I didn't propose right then and there. But I just knew. I said, okay, this is a priority to him. He's got a percentage picked out. He's got a plan. This is it. This is the done deal. And if you are not married, you should look for someone who's generous. Because let's all be honest, the very extreme, very polar opposite characteristic of being generous is what? It's greedy. And no one really wants to be with someone that's super greedy. So if you don't want to be with a greedy person, you should look for a generous person. You should pray and ask God to give you a generous spouse. And do you know what someone who's generous, do you know what kind of spouse they're probably looking for? Probably a generous person. So you should work on being generous. You should take some of these things in the definition of generous, and you should start applying them to your life. And if you're married and you've never had a conversation with your spouse, what is our plan? What is our calculated amount? Is this a priority in our life? Don't wait for your spouse to make the first move. We all know that's the easy thing to do. You should take the first move. And you should go to your spouse and you say, hey, what's our plan? Do we have a plan? Hey, what percentage do you feel good about? Because this is what I was thinking, but what do you think? You should sit down and have this conversation with your spouse, because y'all's income, that's your money together. Like, that is one. Y'all are one. And so you shouldn't just go home and be like, oh, I feel good about this percentage, so I'm going to start giving 10% of all of our income to the church without even talking to your spouse about that. Don't do that. That's going to create a huge fight. But you should really get on the same page with your spouse to have a plan and then to calculate an amount and pick a percentage. And the next part of our definition of generous is designated. And this is my favorite part. I think this will be your favorite part too, because this is where we put the fun in funding, okay? This part's really fun, I promise. This is literally where you pick where you're going to give your money. So fun, right? We get to choose. I think the reason a lot of people hate giving is because people are always asking them to give. And they always have to say no, and then they feel bad about it, or they feel guilty, or they're like, oh, I just don't like it. People are always asking me to give. But generous people don't have to feel guilty when they say no, because they've already said yes. And so if you pick where you're going to send your money, if you pick where you're going to give, you can just say no a lot of times because you know you've already said yes. Because that's what generous people do. Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is brilliant. This is brilliant. You guys should really listen to what Jesus says. Even if you don't consider yourself a Jesus follower or a Christian, just the stuff he says is just brilliant. Okay, so bear with me. So where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What does that mean, Des? Okay, you know that truck that you bought? The really nice one. You know, the one that you spent a lot of money on. You love that truck. Like, you just really love it. And it's out there in the parking lot, and right now you're just thinking about it. You're like, oh, yeah, dude, I just love that truck. Or maybe it's not a car. Maybe it's a camper, a handbag, maybe a pair of shoes, a musical instrument. There is something that you spent a lot of money on. You can do it. Just picture it in your mind. That one thing you spent a lot of money on, and oh, you just love that thing. Because where you send your money, there your heart is going to go too. It's tied to it. And so if you want your heart to be in a certain place, if you're ever trying to redirect your life or turn your life in a different direction, you want your heart to go there, you should start sending your money there. Because your heart will be tied to it. Your heart will go there too. And on the other hand, if there's something you know you should not be doing, if there's something you know is not good for you, it's not good for your marriage, it's not good for your family, and you're sending your money there, you should stop. You should stop because your heart is going there. Your heart is tied to where you send your money. Wow, Des, how do I know? How do I know where to send my money? How do I know? Because well, saving's good, right? Why don't I just save all my money? That seems wise. That seems smart. Retirement, it's a good thing. It is. Saving is really good. But saving is how you say yes to you and your future. Saving is how you say yes to you and your future. But giving is how you say yes to what's important to you. It's how you say yes to what is important to you. How do you know where to give? I don't know, Des. There's a lot of things that are important to me. That truck out there is really important to me. How do I know where to give? Well, you should ask yourself these two questions. What are you grateful for? And what breaks your heart? We should give from a grateful heart. And we should give from a broken heart. Give from a grateful heart. And give from a broken heart. This is why so many people give to their local church. Because they're really thankful for their local church. Because their high school student went on that one retreat. And they started to see a change in their high school student. And they're thankful now for their local church. Or because their kids come on Sundays and they love their church. So it makes their parents really grateful. Maybe you heard that one thing that the pastor said, and you implemented it in your marriage, and it made your marriage better. Or that one thing that you heard, that one verse that you learned, and now all of a sudden you just have a different perspective on life. You actually like your job. If you are grateful for your local church, you should give there, because we should give from a grateful heart. Same reason. It's the same reason why if you have a college student that went off to college and miraculously, somehow, by God's grace, ended up in an on-campus ministry or a church in their college town, you should write them a check. Because that is a miracle, and you should be really thankful for that church. We should give from a grateful heart. And we should give from a broken heart. What breaks your heart? What keeps you up at night? What wakes you up in the middle of the night? What is it that you just wished you could do more about, that you wished you could fix? I bet there's an organization doing something about that, and you should give there. I got to have a conversation with someone recently and hear about what breaks their heart. They were telling me that they drive through Mansfield to go to work, and they see these people just sleeping on the streets. Salvation Army's full, no more beds. And he didn't have to look at me and say, Des, this is what breaks my heart. I could see it. It breaks him. This is what burdens him. This is why he feels like it's too heavy for him to carry by himself. That's what breaks his heart. What breaks your heart? And if you don't know, if you're like, Des, I don't really have a burden. I don't know. You should ask God to break your heart. And I promise he will. It won't be fun. It won't be easy. But our hearts should break for the things that breaks God's heart. And if you ask God to break your heart, not only will that bring clarity to know where to give your money or where to send it to, I believe that will draw you near to God by asking him to give you a burden that reflects his heart, to give you a burden to break your heart over something that breaks his. So ask God to break your heart, because we should give from a grateful heart and a broken one. That's how we know where to send our money, where to designate it to. And when it comes to getting on the same page with your spouse, as far as having a plan, calculating an amount, you should ask your spouse those two questions. Man, what are you grateful for? What are you grateful for? What breaks your heart? Do you know that about your spouse? What are you grateful for? And what breaks your heart? I bet that won't only clarify your plan and your calculation and your designation, but I think that'll draw you and your spouse closer to each other when you ask them, what are you grateful for and what breaks your heart? Include that in your conversation that you are going to initiate the next time that you have an opportunity to sit down and have that conversation with your spouse. Definition of generous is that we are going to premeditate, have a plan, we're going to calculate, and then we're going to designate from a grateful heart and from a broken heart. When we first hear about Jesus talking about giving, when we hear Jesus talking about giving in the Gospels, Jesus typically talked about giving to the poor. Okay, he talked about giving to the poor, and this was really common. You'll see this as you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. But when Jesus talked about this, see, the church hadn't started yet. It was a temple system. And all the Jews sent a temple tax to the temple. So Jesus didn't have to preach and teach on giving to the temple because there was this temple tax system. So no one had to make like an emotional appeal. No one had to convince or coerce or try to provoke someone to give money to the temple, because it was just taxed. Jews sent all their temple tax in from all over, and the temple was just supported that way. I asked Ben if we could do something like that just to make it easier. He said no, so you guys are welcome. But when the temple system stopped, or when the temple system stopped for some of the new Christians, because this Christian movement started, right? So Jesus' death and resurrection, and now there's Christians, okay? So these people that are Christians that are no longer Jews, they don't go to the temple. So now, in Jerusalem, we have Christians that are outcasts. They don't fit in with the temple system, and they're being outcasted. They can't get jobs. They're very poor. And at the time, Paul was planting these churches all around the Mediterranean. Paul was planting these churches, and he decided that he should talk to these churches about how to give to these Christians in Jerusalem. Because these Christians in Jerusalem, the Christians that were all over Europe, they were really thankful for the Christians in Jerusalem. Because the Christians in Jerusalem were the very people, the very eyewitness accounts of Jesus' death and resurrection. And the Christians in Jerusalem were the ones who had, like, literally wrote the written records of Jesus' life, of his teachings, of the way that he lived, of the things that he modeled. They wrote these things down. And so the Christians in these churches that Paul was starting, they were really grateful for the Christians in Jerusalem. But they were also really brokenhearted about what they were facing, the trials that they were going through, the poverty that they were facing, the way they were outcasted. They were brokenhearted about that. And so Paul writes to these new churches and then starts instructing them of how they can help them, how they can support them. And this is what Paul says. In 1 Corinthians 16:1-4, Paul says, "Now regarding your question about the money being collected for God's people in Jerusalem, we've designated. We're giving from a grateful heart and we're giving from a broken heart. We're giving to God's people in Jerusalem. You should follow the same procedure I gave to the churches in Galatia," meaning we're doing this at other churches too. This is not just you. This is something that we're going to collect together. Paul says, on the first day, priority. We're not drawing what's last out of the pot. We're taking what is first. We're making it a priority. On the first day of each week, you should put aside a portion of the money you have earned. Pick a percentage. "Well, Des, is it 10? Is it less than that? Can I give more than that? What is a percentage? Because I just don't..." Pick a percentage. That's between you and God, between you and your spouse. Pick a percentage in keeping with your income. Set aside a portion of the money you have earned. Pick a percentage. And then Paul goes on to say, don't wait. Don't wait until I get there. Generous people don't have to be asked. Generous people don't have to be provoked, don't have to be coerced or convinced or emotionally appealed to. Don't wait. Because generous people have a plan. Generous people prioritize this. And then he says, "When I come, I will write letters of recommendation for the messengers you choose to deliver your gift to Jerusalem. And if it seems appropriate for me to go along, they can travel with me." Essentially, all Paul is saying here is that we're going to have a sort of security system. We're going to have some trustworthy people that are going to take this amount of money to Jerusalem to help support the Christians there. That is where we see the definition of generosity lived out. It's right there. And this was happening at all of those churches. So any of these letters that Paul was writing, you can know that Paul was instructing all of these Christians to give this way. The definition of generosity: premeditating, having a plan, and then calculating, picking a percentage, making it a priority, giving progressively, calculating an amount out, and then designating, giving from a grateful heart and giving from a broken heart, emancipation of personal financial assets. This is a mouthful. And this you may never remember. But a lot simpler way to put it is this: you should give first because it was God's first. And then we should save because money requires responsibility. And then you should spend, live on the rest, and do it wisely. Last week, Josh broke this simple structure down for our middle school and high school students. And then we had productive and constructive conversation about how we can take the money that these students do have and take a next step with that. And be wise in the way that we're stewarding what God has given to us, to give first, to make it a priority, because that's what generous people do. And then save, because that is really wise and responsible, and then live on the rest. This is how we avoid the assumption consumption. This, the way of generosity, this is the only way out. Because the other way, the crazy way, the spending more than we make and then having a bunch of debt and no margin and then worrying and then doing it all over again, that's exhausting. Are you tired of that? Are you done with that way of life? Generosity is the off-ramp. It's the only way out. So to take one step towards reordering your finances, that's the way to a happier life, a freer life, a more peaceful life. Happier is the person who focuses more on giving rather than receiving. What would it look like in your life to change everything in your finances, to reorder your finances around being generous? I know that it would make you feel lighter. What would it do for your kids? What would your kids see when you prioritize giving first and then saving and then living on the rest? And at the end of your life, what kind of legacy would you live? What kind of impact would you make if you choose to become generous? I would love to pray for y'all. Heavenly Father, God, we thank you for your love. Thank you for your son, Jesus, and we thank you for your word. God, thank you for documenting this definition, this procedure, this plan of how we can be generous. God, in a world full of keeping up, getting more, trying to fulfill ourselves with things, God, you offer a way out. You offer a better way, and that's generosity. And so, Lord, would you lead us to know the next step that you have for us to take? And may we see you and grow with you in that. Lord, we love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen.